humbug. Most things freeborn will submit to anything for a salary. Therefore, keep to yourself and don't venture on generalities of which you are intensely ignorant. However, I mentally shake hands with you for your answer, despite its inaccuracy, and as much for the manner in which it was said as for the substance of the speech. The manner was frank and sincere. One does not often see such a manner. No, on the contrary, affectation or coldness or stupid, coarse-minded misapprehension of one's meaning are the usual rewards of candor. Not 3 in 3,000 raw schoolgirl governesses would have answered me as you have just done. But I don't mean to flatter you. If you are cast in a different mold to the majority, it is no merit of yours. Nature did it. And then, after all, I go too fast in my conclusions. For what I yet know, you may be no better than the rest. You may have intolerable defects to counterbalance your few good points. And so may you, I thought. My eye met his as the idea crossed my mind. He seemed to read the glance, answering as if its import had been spoken as well as imagined. "Yes, yes, you are right," said he. "I have plenty of faults of my own. I know it, and I don't wish to palliate them, I assure you. God, what I need not be too severe about others. I have a past existence, a series of deeds, a color of life to contemplate within my own breast, which might well call my sneers and censures from my neighbors to myself. I started, or rather, for like other defaulters, I like to lay half the blame on ill fortune and adverse circumstances, was thrust onto a wrong tack at the age of 21, and have never recovered the right course since. But I might have been very different. I might have been as good as you, wiser, almost as stainless. I envy you your peace of mind, your clean conscience, your unpolluted memory. Little girl, a memory without blot or contamination must be an exquisite treasure, an inexhaustible source of pure refreshment, is it not?
How was your memory when you were 18, sir?
All right, then. Limpid, salubrious, no gush of bilge water had turned it to fetid puddle. I was your equal at 18, quite your equal. Nature meant me to be, on the whole, a good man, Miss Eyre, one of the better kind. And you see, I am not so. You would say you don't see it, at least. I flatter myself I read as much in your eye. Beware, by the by, what you express with that organ. I am quick at interpreting its language. Then take my word for it. I am not a villain. You are not to suppose that. Not to attribute to me any such bad eminence, but owing, I verily believe, rather to circumstances than to my natural bent, I am a trite, commonplace sinner, hackneyed in all the poor, petty dissipations with which the rich and worthless try to put on life. Do you wonder that I avow this to you? Know that in the course of your future life you will often find yourself elected the involuntary confidant of your acquaintance's secrets. People will instinctively find out, as I have done, that it is not your forte to tell of yourself, but to listen while others talk of themselves. They will feel, too, that you listen with no malevolent scorn of their indiscretion, but with a kind of innate sympathy, not the less comforting and encouraging because it is very unobtrusive in its manifestations.
How do you know? How can you guess all this, sir?
I know it well. Therefore, I proceed almost as freely as if I were writing my thoughts in a diary. You would say I should have been superior to circumstances. So I should. So I should. But you see, I was not. When fate wronged me, I had not the wisdom to remain cool. I turned desperate, then I degenerated. Now, when any vicious simpleton excites my disgust by his paltry ribaldry, I cannot flatter myself that I am better than he. I am forced to confess that he and I are on a level. I wish I had stood firm. God knows I do. dread remorse when you are tempted to err, Miss Eyre. Remorse is the poison of life. Repentance is said to be its cure, sir. It is not its cure. Reformation may be its cure, and I could reform. I have strength yet for that. But where is the use of thinking of it, hampered, burdened, cursed as I am? Besides, since happiness is irrevocably denied me, I have a right to get pleasure out of life, and I will get it, cost what it may. Then you will degenerate still more, sir. Possibly, yet why should I, if I can get sweet, fresh pleasure, and I may get it as sweet and fresh as the wild honey the bee gathers on the moor? It will sting. It will taste bitter, sir. How do you know? You never tried it. How very serious, how very solemn you look, and you are as ignorant of the matter as this cameo head, taking one from the mantelpiece. You have no right to preach to me, you neophyte, that have not passed the porch of life and are absolutely unacquainted with its mysteries. I only remind you of your own words, sir. You said error brought remorse, and you pronounced remorse the poison of existence. And who talks of error now? I scarcely think the notion that flitted across my brain was an error. I believe it was an inspiration rather than a temptation. It was very genial, very soothing, I know that. Here it comes again. It is no devil, I assure you, or if it be, it has put on the robes of an angel of light. I think I must admit so fair a guest when it asks entrance to my heart. Distrust it, sir. It is not a true angel. Once more, how do you know? By what instinct do you pretend to distinguish between a fallen seraph of the abyss and a messenger from the eternal throne, between a guide and a seducer? I judge by your countenance, sir, which was troubled when you said the suggestion had returned upon you. I feel sure it will work you more misery if you listen to it. Not at all. It bears the most gracious message in the world. For the rest, you are not my conscience keeper, so don't make yourself uneasy. Here, come in, bonny wanderer. He said this as if he spoke to a vision, viewless to any eye but his own. Then, folding his arms, which he had half extended on his chest, he seemed to enclose in their embrace the invisible being. "Now," he continued, again addressing me, "I have received the pilgrim, a disguised deity, as I verily believe. Already it has done me good. My heart was a sort of charnel. It will now be a shrine." "To speak truth, sir, I don't understand you at all. I cannot keep up the conversation because it has got out of my depth. Only one thing I know. You said you were not as good as you should like to be, and that you regretted your own imperfection. One thing I can comprehend. You intimated that to have a sullied memory was a perpetual bane. It seems to me that if you tried hard, you would in time find it possible to become what you yourself would approve, and that if from this day you began with resolution to correct your thoughts and actions, you would in a few years have laid up a new and stainless store of recollections to which you might revert with pleasure. Justly thought, rightly said, Miss Eyre, and at this moment I am paving hell with energy.
Sir,
I am laying down good intentions, which I believe durable as flint. Certainly my associates and pursuits shall be other than they have been.
And better?
And better, so much better as pure ore is than foul dross.
You seem to doubt me.
I don't doubt myself. I know what my aim is, what my motives are, and at this moment I pass a law, unalterable as that of the Medes and Persians, that both are right.
They cannot be, sir, if they require a new statute to legalize them.
They are, Miss Eyre, though they absolutely require a new statute. Unheard-of combinations of circumstances demand unheard-of rules.
That sounds a dangerous maxim, sir.
Because one can see at once that it is liable to abuse. Sententious sage, so it is, but I swear by my household gods not to abuse it.
You are human and fallible.
I am, So are you. What then?
The human and fallible should not arrogate a power with which the divine and perfect alone can be safely entrusted.
What power?
That of saying, of any strange, unsanctioned line of action, let it be right.
Let it be right. The very words, you have pronounced them.
May it be right, then, I said as I rose, deeming it useless to continue a discourse which was all darkness to me, and besides, sensible that the character of my interlocutor was beyond my penetration, at least beyond its present reach, and feeling the uncertainty, the vague sense of insecurity, which accompanies a conviction of ignorance.
Where are you going?
To put Adele to bed. It is past her bedtime.
You are afraid of me, because I talk like a sphinx.
Your language is enigmatical, sir, but though I am bewildered, I am certainly not afraid.
You are afraid. Your self-love dreads a blunder.
In that sense, I do feel apprehensive. I have no wish to talk nonsense.
If you did, it would be in such a grave, quiet manner, I should mistake it for sense. Do you never laugh, Miss Eyre? Don't trouble yourself to answer. I see you laugh rarely, but you can laugh very merrily. Believe me, you are not naturally austere, any more than I am naturally vicious. The low-wood constraint still clings to you somewhat, controlling your features, muffling your voice, and restricting your limbs, and you fear in the presence of a man and a brother, or father, or master, or what you will, to smile too gaily, speak too freely, or move too quickly. But in time I think you will learn to be natural with me, as I find it impossible to be conventional with you. And then your looks and movements will have more vivacity and variety than they dare offer now. I see at intervals the glance of a curious sort of bird through the close-set bars of a cage. A vivid, restless, resolute captive is there. Were it but free, it would soar cloud high. You are still bent on going?
It has struck 9, sir.
Never mind. Wait a minute. Adele is not ready to go to bed yet. My position, Miss Eyre, with my back to the fire and my face to the room, favours observation.
While talking to you, I have also occasionally watched Adele. I have my own reasons for thinking her a curious study, reasons that I may, nay, that I shall impart to you some day. She pulled out of her box about 10 minutes ago a little pink silk frock. Rapture lit her face as she unfolded it. Coquetry runs in her blood, blends with her brains, and seasons the marrow of her bones. "Il faut que je le sais," cried she, "et à l'instant même," and she rushed out of the room. She is now with Sophie undergoing a robing process. In a few minutes she will re-enter, and I know what I shall see. A miniature of Celine Varin, as she used to appear on the boards at the rising of... But never mind that. However my tenderest feelings are about to receive a shock, such is my presentiment. Stay now to see whether it will be realized. Ere long Adele's little foot was heard tripping across the hall. She entered, transformed as her guardian had predicted. A dress of rose-colored satin, very short, and as full in the skirt as it could be gathered, replaced the brown frock she had previously worn. A wreath of rosebuds circled her forehead. Her feet were dressed in silk stockings and small white satin sandals. "Est-ce que ma robe va bien?" cried she, bounding forwards. "Et mes souliers, et mes bas, tenez, je crois que je vais danser." And spreading out her dress, she chasséed across the room till, having reached Mr. Rochester, she wheeled lightly round before him on tiptoe, then dropped on one knee at his feet, exclaiming, "Monsieur, je vous remercie mille fois de votre bonté." Then rising, she added, "C'est comme cela que maman faisait, n'est-ce pas, monsieur?"
"Precisely," was the answer, "and comme cela." She charmed my English gold out of my British breeches pocket. I have been green too, Miss Eyre. Aye, grass green. Not a more vernal tint freshens you now than once freshened me.
My spring is gone, however, but it has left me that French floweret on my hands, which in some moods I would fain be rid of, not valuing now the root whence it sprang, having found that it was a sort which nothing but gold dust could manure. I have but half a liking to the blossom, especially when it looks so artificial as just now. I keep it and rear it, rather, on the Roman Catholic principle of expiating numerous sins, great or small, by one good work. I'll explain all this some day. Good night.